Years ago, when I was a boy, it used to be a popular quartet, barbershop quartet number. They went something like this. I want a girl just like the girl that married in dear old day. I haven't heard that song in many a day. Maybe nobody wants the girl like married dear old dad anymore. I don't know what the situation is. Somebody said, well, if you want a perfect girl and you found one, she wouldn't marry you because you wouldn't be a perfect boy. And I guess there's some truth to that. Wives come in all kinds of varieties. I might add, husbands come in all kinds of varieties. But for some reason, 31st Proverb talks about women. I'm not going to limit it just to women, although the text is on that subject. But I'll try to make it practical to both men and women, and single as well as married. Well, we've come a long way in the last several months. We spent 31 weeks on Proverbs, give and take a few in between because of other services during those days, but we've covered every chapter now, but the last one, Proverbs, the 31st chapter. Doesn't give me a whole lot of selection here if I don't want to preach on women, because there's not many verses that don't deal with it. Now, for those of you who have married children, the first things I will say won't make much difference to you. It's too late. Okay? For those of you who have teenage children, you might find what I'm going to say interesting, and especially if you're an unmarried young person, I've got some things to say to you. Words of wisdom from an older man, alright? Before I give you the wisdom of an older woman, I want you to notice that this proverb was from King Lemuel. Not Solomon's proverb, but really it's a woman's sermon to women. It's a strange chapter in the Bible. A woman preaches a sermon to women through her son. Now what this woman wanted was that her son would know how to select himself the ideal wife. Now we teach our children a lot of things, but I'm afraid we don't spend enough time teaching them how to select the right mate that they're supposed to live with once they get married, till death do they part. What parent is there who has young children and teenage children who does not really secretly want to have some say as to who will be their future son-in-law and daughter-in-law? You may not say anything, but deep down you want to have a choice in the matter because you realize the choice is really a crucial thing. And in this day and time, it seems that it's no problem at all to make a mismatch or a bad match, because the divorce rate now is almost 50-50 for everyone that says I do, the other says I quit, or I don't, or I won't, or I shouldn't have, or I wished I hadn't. The choice seems to be going down as far as the ability to find the really ideal kind of person that you would like to marry. The ideal boy and the ideal girl are sort of a figment of the old imagination. It's something of bygone days when I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad, and there were quite a few of them around to find. Now, the majority of Proverbs 31 is addressed to the subject of how do you spot the ideal woman? Now, if you're married, how to be the ideal wife? That takes care of that, doesn't it? If you're a man, how to spot, or a girl, how to spot the ideal boy, we can apply some of the very same principles. And if you're already married, how to be the ideal husband. For what is said about the woman can equally apply to the man in many cases. Now, the mother of King Lemuel knew that the day would come her son would want to be married. And she wanted to have the best chance for her son to have a happy marriage. To do that, she didn't pick his wife, she laid down some rules. And I assume that she was this kind of person herself, that she could give unto him a living example of what she was talking about. But anyway, she gave him some guidelines. It's all to say, well, when you go out court and take this little checklist with you, and you check off these qualities or these traits in every girl you go with, and when you find one where you can check off all the squares, she's got it, Man, you latch on to her. Now, a lot of mothers today don't go to that trouble. They just sort of look around for the most eligible boy the girl can find and just hope for the best and trust everything to luck and sigh a sigh of relief when they say I do and walk out the church door. And that's about all that she does. I think sometimes parents give only three guidelines to their children in selecting a mate, and it's the same three that we hear from the world. It's the one that young people hear from their peer group. Number one, when choosing somebody to marry, find one that's got some fame. Get you somebody, the star football player. You know, the one most likely to succeed in life. And find somebody who has some fame. Get yourself a somebody. Or you'll be named a nobody. You're going to change your name, change it to something that'll give you some prominence. Alright? Secondly, find somebody with a fortune. I call it the 3F selection. Find somebody with fame, find somebody with fortune, marry money, and find somebody who is fun. There's your 3Fs. Fame, fortune, and fun. You find somebody that fits those categories, well then go ahead and marry them. And then there's some who simply go by the outside rule, what I call the outside rule, to look on the outside. And if the girl or boy has a pretty good-looking appearance, they're attractive and they're nice to look at, you wouldn't mind seeing them in the morning when you get up, well, then that's good enough. That's called marrying on looks. I came across this idea one time, and I think it's a pretty good one. If I would go back in my days now, young people, if I could do this all over again, and I'm saying... I'm satisfied my wife now. But let me go on. I study the parents a lot more than I study the boy or girl. I'd spend some time, if the girl or boy wasn't home, I'd be fine with me. I'd like to spend some time with the parents, especially unannounced time. I just like to drop over, drop in. At all times of the day, I'd like to be around the parents. Because there's a great truth in this, like father, like son, like mother, like daughter. Not always, but there's a great truth in it. You won't just look like your parents. Sometimes you'll end up being just like your parents. So if you want to know what you're marrying, sometimes just look at the mother or the father real well, and you'll know what you're marrying. But everybody puts on their good manners if you just come and knock on the door for a date. You have to just get to know folks. Just get to know folks. Now notice what this verse says in verse 10. Who, even in this day, King Lemuel's mother said, boy, it's going to be hard for you to find a good wife. Now this is way back there. You know. So she says to him, and he repeats the same thing, who can find a virtuous woman? I imagine she told him that 1,000 times. Son, get yourself a virtuous woman. And he said, man, who can find one? You know, I've been looking and looking and looking and looking. How am I going to find a virtuous woman? Because when I find her, her price is far above rubies. Now, a lot of young men today wouldn't know how to spot a ruby. And a lot of young women wouldn't know how to spot a man that was a ruby. Now, this is a rare kind of individual. I have to say to you, it's a rare person that's going to fit all of these checklist categories that this woman gave to her son. Now, the word virtuous normally calls to mind, when we use that word, somebody who is morally pure. That is not what it means here when he says, who can find a virtuous woman? What he means is, who can find a woman that possesses certain virtues? Not just a morally upright woman, but who can find a woman who has certain kinds of virtues? Who can find a woman that truly fulfills the roles in life that God gives for her? I'm not so sure women really understand their God-given role in life. Today, woman's lib has really found the image of But there is a role that woman has, and he calls it that role is her virtue, or makes her a virtuous woman. Or who can find a capable woman? Or who can find the ideal woman from the standpoint of God? We're going to be given in this book God's checklist of the ideal woman. I might add the ideal man too. Now, if you're already married, it's never too late to become a capable or ideal or virtuous man or woman, husband or wife. Again, I want to say we're getting a checklist from the Lord. And it's a wise one to have to check out your own life and to check out, if you're not married, the future mate. Now, let's face it, not every woman or man is worth their price in gold. Or their weight in gold. They're not worth the value of a ruby. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, boy, I don't see what he sees in her. Or, I don't see what she sees in him. Then somebody says, well, you know, love's blind. No, love's not blind. It just needs a good checklist. That's all it needs. You need something to compare it with and compare it against. Some folks say, well, boy, she's a real loser. Or he's a real loser. Well, you need a checklist to find out what is a loser or what is a potential loser. Brethren, in marriage, you need to know a person's weaknesses and flaws and faults before you get in. You really do. How do you choose a date fit for a mate? Well, some would say, if they have a cute dimple and a strong arm and a good taste and a quick wit and a bubbly personality and a pleasant smile, that's good enough for me. That's not good enough. Now, the Christian says, oh, that's a bunch of nonsense. I know better than that. First thing, they have to be religious. And they have to be godly. By the word godly, it means that they can't be immoral. They have to be godly. And they have to be a believer. That is, they have to make Christ their Lord and Savior. And they have to be active in church. Now, if they are religious and godly and a believer and active in church, they'll make anybody a good mate. I disagree with you. Maybe they will and maybe they won't. You got a lot of folks who are religious and godly and believers and active in church that are having all kinds of marital problems. We got marriage counselors for the church folks. Now, just because a person goes to church and is religious and is a Christian and is active, that does not mean that they are a ruby and a diamond and a jewel and a virtuous person that's ideal for a mate. I want to go a step further. You think about this one a while. Let me ask you, if you had a son or daughter, I get married too late, but son or daughter, and I was interested in marrying your girl. I was a young man. I came to you, the father, and I said, I have goodly intentions about your daughter. I think I'm falling in love with her. I think I might like to marry her, but I want to ask you a question. If you was me, would you marry your daughter? Would you marry your daughter? Or if you go to a young woman or a wife, mother, and say, listen, Your boy is getting serious with me, and I think he's going to propose, and I think I love him, but I want to ask you something. You're his mother. You've been with him all these years. You know him better than anybody else. If you were me and you were going to spend the rest of your life with your boy as his wife, would you marry him? Boy, that's a good question. You know what flashes into a mind of a mother and a father? Every asset they can drag up, but also comes in there with it, every fault that they got. You can't separate the two. Even though you'd like to build up your daughter and build up your son, you know good and well what those faults are, and man, they wham, wham, wham right into your mind. Now, you're not going to find the perfect girl and the perfect boy. I know that. And then there are some faults you can live with, and then there's some you can't live with. You better find out what's what. I don't know if a parent would lie to you. They'd probably be too honest. They probably overstressed the truth, make things worse than they really were. I remember one boy came to him, man, it's a true story, and asked his permission to marry his daughter. I said, no, I'm not going to let you marry her. The boy was flabbergasted. What? Why? He said, because you're too good for her. You're too good for her. She doesn't deserve it. And she'd run your life. Man, what would you do with a guy like that? Would you go ahead and marry her? I'd have second thoughts. I really would. I want an explanation, of course. Well, what are the checklist points? Let's go through them now. Make out ourselves a list of what it takes to be a virtuous person. Only got 10 minutes to cover 30 minutes of sermon. Well, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. Desirable trait number one, or desirable virtue number one, Proverbs 31:30. Though it's at the very end of the chapter, I'm putting it first. A woman, the last part of the verse, a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. I think that's one checklist requirement I'd have, that they'd be a God-fearing person. We've gone through that category already. A person who is a Christian, a person who knows the Lord, who studies the Word of God, who's interested in the will of God. A person who is open to the suggestions and the influence and the direction of God's plan for a life. I would want that as my first criteria requirement. That would be checklist number one. Is she a God-fearing person? Okay? Desirable virtue number two, Proverbs 31, the last part of verse 27. Here is a very important point to check off. I put it number two in the list. She does not eat the bread of idleness. She does not eat the bread of idleness. Look at verse 13. She seeketh wool and flax, and she works willingly. I like that word, willingly. Does a mother and daddy have to tell her everything she has to do? Or does she do it on her own? Does she have any industrious initiative? Will your child do anything right as far as work goes without you coming along and making them do it? If so, they have a good virtue. Are they self-motivated to produce without somebody crawling down their back all the time? That's important. Because when you get married, are you going to have to tell your wife every day to wash the clothes, every day to wash the dishes, every day to wash her face, every day to get dressed, every day to pick up something? I mean, every day you're going to have to go through the same old routine. Get the supper ready, you know, open the cans, you know. Can you do anything without being told to do it? That's very important in marriage. I put it top of the list. Is she energetic? Some folks say, would you do anything? Well, nobody told me to. They won't wipe the nose if somebody tells them to. Now, verse 15. I like this one. I got a good wife. My wife qualifies for all this stuff. She got the wrong end of the deal. She didn't check me out. Oh, man. She's always got me getting after me to do things. You know, I'm the bad for her. I got to work on this area. Energetic. I'm not too energetic. My parents didn't raise me right there. They did too much and just let me sit around. She's paying for that now. All right. Now, notice that she rises while it's night. That means she gets up early in the morning. I don't know, maybe we're going to do that too often. But she rises early in the morning while everybody else is still asleep. And giveth meat to her house when they're up in the morning. You see, she's got breakfast ready on the table. Well, you don't find that many in the morning, you know? We got instant toasters and instant toast, all right? And giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens. She takes care of everybody. Verse 19. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the staff. She's a busy person. One time a man brought a king, a servant girl, that he thought would really be an excellent asset to his kingdom, and he said to her, or said to the king, "This is an unusual lady. She is able to read and write in Latin and Greek and Hebrew. The king said that is a rare attainment for a young lady like that, but pray tell me, can she spin the wool? In other words, is she of any good to me? Is she useful? I don't care whether she can write, speak Latin and Greek and Hebrew. I'm interested, can she produce some benefits for the household? Alright? The question I'd like to ask simply is, can a girl cook? Can she clean? Can she sweep? Can she sew? Can she iron? You know, this lady here has homely attributes. Now, nothing is more irritating than a person that does nothing when there is much to be done. Really. The only, I guess, title that someone might have is the husband can say, well, she'd make you an excellent bridge partner. Or if you wanted somebody who could boil you a good cup of water, she could do that for you. Or if you wanted somebody that could tell you about what's the latest events on the soap opera, she doesn't miss a one of them. And that's all the accomplishments that I can give you, boy. But when you find a woman who's devoted to being useful, who is self-motivated, who is full of enterprise, who is not afraid to get her hands dirty, who does the menial tasks that need to be doing, that takes pride in her work, that wants to make something out of her life, that wants to accomplish something, you found the second virtue. Boy, you better think twice about that girl, that boy. You're not going to find many like that today. Desirable virtue number 3. Proverbs 31:12. She will do her husband no evil all the days of his life. Verse 27, the last part of the verse, or the first part of the verse, she looks well to the ways of her household. She's capable of being a devoted mother and a devoted wife. That means she's unselfish. She cares about the needs of her family. And you know what that requires? This lady here is organized, brother. Her time is organized. Her tasks are organized. She makes plans. She carries out her plans. She's a well-disciplined, organized individual. Not me. I run in the house, Mary Lou, where's my glasses? Where is this? Where is that? And I expect her, you know, to keep up with all my stuff. How often do children run to the mother, where is this, where is that? We expect the mother to be organized. And when mothers are organized, everything seems to run much more smoothly around the house. If I go in the garage to get a tool and it's not there, I hit the panic button. Where are my tools, you know? Well, there's no telling where they are. Something about a man, he wants everything laid out for him, but he doesn't want to lay it out. That's one of the woman's roles in life. She sort of organizes the home and keeps things in place. Desirable virtue number 4, Proverbs 31:22. She makes herself coverings of tapestry and her clothing is silk and purple. She has an air of elegance. She looks nice. She looks neat. She looks clean. She dresses modestly. She dresses economically. She doesn't blow the whole family's budget on clothes. She makes herself presentable and attractive and neat looking. That's a real virtue today. It really is. Alright, desirable virtue number 5. Proverbs 31:26. She opens her mouth. A lot of folks say that's what gets you in trouble. No, no. She opens her mouth with wisdom. With wisdom. And in her tongue is the law of kindness. I don't believe God ever intended that a woman should seek only if spoken to. I don't believe that philosophy. Nor do I believe a woman should always yield her opinions to somebody else's. She has a head and shall come to her to give counsel and advice to him when he must make decisions for the family. She is to be a helper in the matter of wise reasoning when decisions have to be made. Also in this matter, being a wise counselor, a wise person. She is also a wise person in business. You look at this. Verse 16. She considers a field and she goes out and buys it. And with her own money she has earned, she plants the vineyard. Huh? Working women is nothing new, folks. Not at all. Look at verse 24. She makes fine linen and then she goes in the market and she sells her fine linen. And she delivers girdles she has made unto the merchants. She does all the work required of her at home and then she has time planned and scheduled and she uses her God-given talents to help bring income into the family. And she is this person that in her wisdom speaks kindly. She calms the situations, calms troubled waters. She has feelings for the family. When you find a person, a woman or a man with that kind of wisdom, it's a good virtue. And then last of all, virtue number 6, verse 20, she stretches out her hands to the poor and she reaches forth her hands to the needy. You need somebody that has signs of being considerate and compassionate and understanding. And that is shown by their consideration to give to the poor. And not only that, did you know that when you give to the poor, you ensure God's blessing on your own home and family? Did you know that? That's true. God promises to and has given her family some insurance when she gives to the poor. It also reveals her heart. She has a compassionate, unselfish caring for other people. If she has that for others, she'll sure have it for her own family.